let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, let's go around the NFL here in the loop, and it's brought to you by Quick Assist, your no-hassle solution to reselling your tickets across every marketplace. Download Quick Assist from your app store today. That's QUICKASYST. Quick Assist, your ticket everywhere. All right, let's talk a little bit about this weekend that was in the NFL, which was a more normal week than maybe any other week that we got. And the reason why I say that is because all but one of the favorites won outright. So now, not all the favorites covered necessarily, but at least the teams that Vegas viewed as the better team and having the better opportunity, they did win, except for one, and that was an AFC South matchup, of course. Mm-hmm. But a more normal. I think it feels good for me personally. Maybe it's not the most exciting necessarily, but it feels good for me to be like, hey, the teams that I feel like are better are winning on a particular week. It feels like it normalized some things.
Little water finding its level,
yeah,
so to speak. But in the context of that, there were some very interesting developments in the NFL.
Yes, yes. Now, I don't think it's ever normal when you get something like this. Lions, Cowboys. Real beat them down situation there, because the Lions definitely came in as the better team. I don't know that I was expecting them to get out here and embarrass them boys like that. 47-9, which, Lopez, I'm sure you're excited to find out, is a scoregami.
You and the scoregami.
That's right. The 1,087th unique score in NFL history. 47-9 had never happened before yesterday, and it happened in an extravagant way. It felt like the Lions were actively trying to belittle
the Cowboys. No,
they
were
toying.
They were toying with them. Yeah, the hook and ladder to an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Double reverse or triple reverse or whatever.
Yeah, they had the flea flicker going on. Ben Johnson was in his bag. Yeah. You saw Aaron Glenn and Dan Campbell on the sideline, yeah. Key Keen. And then, obviously, the coup d'etat was also making sure that you had big men checking in. I think at one point you had two offensive linemen check in as eligible receivers, mm-hmm. Harkening back to last year when they had that. Was that a primetime game that they had end in kind of nastiness? They lost to the Cowboys because they, was it like Skinner or whatever?
Skipper. Yeah.
Was trying to.
Oh, he was split, baby.
Yeah,
he was out there.
He was trying to register as an eligible receiver, and he did not get registered, and that ultimately took points off the board for them. Yeah, they made sure. They were like, no, we're going to make sure that they're eligible, and we're eligible to beat your ass.
We're running routes.
Yeah. Yeah, so shout out to the Lions in that regard, but obviously it's kind of Pyrrhic in a big way, because during the course of this, and mind you, I did not see this injury happen, and so I'm very glad that I didn't, because I really hate watching NFL injuries. But Aiden Hutchinson left the game with a leg injury. He fractured his tibia and his fibula in the course of this. Marty Jaramillo, CBS Sports, hypothesized that obviously season's over, but not career ending, that he'll be NFL ready hopefully in like 8 to 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. But that's got to be tough for a Lions team that's expecting to be a Super Bowl contender this
year. Well, and he, it was bad enough that he had to have emergency surgery. You know, you have a fracture that bad, all sorts of things come into play. I'm not a doctor, of course, but you hear about things like, okay, you know, bleeding and arteries and, you know, what could happen internally and all that. It was awful. And a clear downer, you know, to an otherwise, you know, incredible performance. But that's a big hit for them. And then the other part of
he had best odds for defensive player of the year to this.
He was leading the league in sacks, you know, and everything else going on with him. But this was utter humiliation. Like,
on Gerald Wayne Jones's 82nd birthday. Happy birthday, Gerald Wayne Jones.
No way to treat a man on his birthday. And he spoke.
Yeah, but what are we talking about? What are we talking about? A man? We talking about Jared Jones?
Yeah, this is true.
What you mean?
This is true.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. The Cowboys. We'll see if they're any better coming in or when we go up there with the Texans for Week 11 Monday Night Football. Because as of right now, they look like nothing is good. Their pass rushers are injured. Right. They only have one wide receiver that can't run the football, can't stop the run, can't stop the pass. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they do.
Oh, you mentioned the run game. That's what was really the most humiliating thing to me. It's like Jared Goff was turning around and said, how many yards you want? You want 6? You want 12? Well, you know, how many? They were just mauling And David Montgomery runs angry.
Yes.
Ooh, baby.
And that's an offensive line that's also one of the best in the league and has been for the last few seasons. Yep. Tough. Yep. Now, that you talk about that as a future opponent in the Cowboys. Future opponent in the Lions is that one looks a little tougher. That one definitely
that's what
looks
I'm worried about.
Yeah, and 8-3-2 is right. Going back to the Aiden Hutchinson thing, you know that the injury is severe when the opposing players are gathering around in that instance, when people are waving people onto the field like, hey, yeah. come help this cat.
Yeah.
So that was a sad thing to see during the course of this. But excluding a kneel down with at the very end, 8 seconds to go in the second quarter when they were taking it to half, the Lions scored on all of their first 10 drives.
That's good, isn't it?
Very. That's utter dominance.
That's good.
Utter dominance. All right, some other things around the NFL. Injuries, maybe not injuries, but kind of health scares abounded in this one because Jim Harbaugh missed the start of his team's game. Chargers faced off against the Broncos due to an arrhythmia, irregular heartbeat, to the point where he was John Harbaugh also. They played in the noon slate. The Chargers and Broncos were playing in that kind of midday 3:25 slate. And John Harbaugh, after the Ravens got a win versus Washington, he was on the podium talking to media, and they ended abruptly his availability so that he could, I guess, get information about his brother Jim seemingly having a health issue early.
That said, we're all monitor that and see how it goes. But Jim Harbaugh's quietly doing some Jim Harbaugh things in L.A.
That man just wins.
Yeah.
As a coach, he just gets winning football done. They win 23-16.
Not exciting, not sexy, but efficient. And, oh, by the way, the schedule is very, very kind to them coming up with Cardinals, Saints, Browns, and Titans coming up. So don't sleep on the L.A. Chargers by any stretch.
Yeah, man, done a good job. They've somewhat rehabilitated Justin Herbert, 237 on the day, 21 of 34 with one touchdown. But really the big thing is Harbaugh going to have them run that football. And 128 yards says, yep, they running that football. So Jim Harbaugh, obviously hope he's well health-wise, but and it's apparently he's been dealing with that that arrhythmia
for a little while. Yeah, it's not uncommon. Well, I shouldn't say uncommon. It's not new. Yeah, that he had that.
But yeah, so that was a little bit of a scary proposition. Something that wasn't scary at all. Cleveland Browns offense.
What's the latest update on the old Browns?
Yeah, man. It's I almost feel bad bringing up the Browns all the damn time. Almost. Yeah. not quite, but almost. Because it just feels like, am I piling on? Mm-hmm. But when you're this bad, what you supposed to say? The Browns have now become the first team in 10 years to score under 20 points in each of its first six games in a season. They just, that offense is abysmal, and it's not just the offense all the way around. It really is the quarterback.
Yeah.
Cleveland, if you want to get it further into how bad that they have been, they have now scored a touchdown only once in its last 29 drives.
Deshaun Watson is missing the easiest throws a high school quarterback could make. Like a little simple 10-yard out, wide open receiver, sailing it 4 or 5 yards over the dude's head. It's a mess.
It's so bad to the point, man, I wonder if he's doing it on purpose to try to get benched on purpose.
Just cash his checks?
Like, I've never seen a quarterback that bad in my life, man.
It was awful.
We've seen some bad quarterbacks.
We know about bad quarterbacking.
Yeah.
and that, I mean, just...
Like, I feel like he's doing it on purpose.
Awful.
Yeah, I mean, they ultimately get to a point in this one where this is honestly, at least statistically, one of the better games that he's had in some ways. 168 yards in the air, no touchdowns, no interceptions.
I want to say it's QBR. I want to say it's his second highest, which was like 34.
And that is
the highest of the season.
Yeah, that's the proprietary ESPN quarterback rating. Yeah, if you want to be nice to use passer rating, that kind of doesn't account some other things. 90.5, which downright fine, I guess.
Downright mediocre.
Yeah. Gross. 7.3 yards per attempt, which is much better. Typically, his yards per attempt passing-wise look like a good running back.
And that's what we're bragging about. That's what we're bragging about with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, a 20-16 loss to the Eagles. They're now 1-5, the Browns are. And oddly enough, during the course of this game, late in the game, I think with about 8 minutes to go, they decide to go for a field goal. Kevin Stefanski, or actually even later, 3:54, decide to go for a field goal in that situation where you really still needed points in a big way, and they ultimately just don't get the ball back at the end of the game. People are kind of banging on Stefanski, but I just don't know what you're supposed to do. Do you trust this offense enough to actually go and get points in any situation?
How big would the cheer be if he gets benched in Cleveland?
Huge.
It'd be like the loudest they've had.
Yeah, I think everybody on this planet is out.
Yeah.
They want to change. And crazy as it sounds, Stefanski, I think he said after the game, they're not making the quarterback change.
Yeah, he did.
He just consistently doubles down on this. And I don't know if he just has no opportunity to.
I don't think he has
to,
the power.
But, like, he's been out here very staunchly, like, with his messaging, saying that, no, we're not even considering that, and we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And I do wonder, even if you did not have the power to, if you would soften the media perspective on it by going, yeah, well, I mean.
He has the power to do it mid-game.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care if the general manager or owner says, you know, you're not going to bench him, you're not going to bench him. He can pull him out mid-game.
I don't know if it's a him thing, because he kind of did this the last year with Baker Mayfield, where Mayfield was clearly hurt. He had a torn labrum.
Yeah. Yep.
And he kept playing. I'm like, the season over.
Yeah.
Like, the season is over. Why did you keep playing them? And he finally didn't play on the last game of the year where it didn't even matter.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on, man.
Yeah. And we'll see if that ultimately costs him his job at this point, because it feels, oddly enough, that he is in the running to be one of those guys that may not return to their team.
They're going
to
find another scapegoat. Find another scapegoat. I thought this offense was going to work for Deshaun.
No comment. Some other things around the NFL. Let's see if we can bring this back local.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking, oddly enough, about Baltimore, Washington. They played in what was supposed to be an electrifying, high-flying offensive battle. Ultimately, 30-23, not bad in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But during the course of this, we got a little bit of a look from Jayden Daniels, an interesting note that came from the CBS broadcast, and this one came via Tracy Wolfson.
You guys talked about how competitive the two of them are between C.J. Stroud and Jayden Daniels. Well, Daniels actually has Stroud's rookie season stats, 4,108 passing yards, 23 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, written on his phone. He says it's a personal challenge to beat them. Stroud knows it. He's okay with it. The two are extremely competitive with each other.
How's that for a motivational technique?
I love it. And it's, you know, it's not unique. Things like that have happened before. I really like this guy's game. I mean, I think the Commanders are, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Washington Commanders are, they're set up for a while now. Like, they are set up.
Look like they might win that division.
They might.
They have a possibility.
And
for
even
sure.
If they don't, they're pointed in the right direction.
They're the only team that actually look good in that division right now.
Yeah.
The Eagles don't look good. Even though they beat the Browns, they still didn't look good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
We'll get to that.
269 and 3 touchdowns for Jayden Daniels against a really good Baltimore Ravens team. They're leading the NFC East. Don't look now. But yeah, Washington, I think that they have the foundation. They do. They've spent a lot on free agents this offseason, and I don't know how long-term those free agents necessarily are, so I'm interested to see how they continue to build with that, considering that they, you know, really went in free agent-wise. But at the very least, They have pulled a turnaround that I don't think a lot of people expected, from being a laughable kind of situation to now seemingly having a franchise quarterback and some a possibility of winning their division.
To me, even just mediocre, general managership gets them to where they need to be. You got to shore up the defense. Got to be able to bring a few more pieces in on offense. I think they're in a really good spot, and it's been a long time for Washington.
Quickly before we go, a team that you will be seeing next week, Green Bay Packers, handle up on the Arizona Cardinals, and the Cardinals not necessarily in a great place, but Jordan Love looking pretty good, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception in the course of this game. How are you feeling? We're not quite turning the page on this week and looking forward to next week yet.
Yeah.
But as a peek forward, Jordan Love looks like he is. He might be the biggest quarterback challenge that you get thus far in the season.
I think, we'll dig in more probably starting Wednesday looking forward. But the Packers could be a problem. Certainly going to be a big test, going into the game that you expect. You know, we knew the Vikings would be big, but didn't know, how good they were at that point. The Packers and Jordan Love are getting it done. How about 9 different receivers catching a ball, 7 different running backs running the ball?
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me about this team, is that they just have a lot of different guys that they can target. And I think that multiplicity, I don't know what word is in that instance, might be really interesting when you see it in Green Bay next week. But for the time being, that is Around the NFL, brought to you by Quick Assist. Appreciate you hanging out with us in the loop, Sports Radio 610. Let's get back to reacting to a victory from your Texans, 41-21 yesterday. And is really fixing this offense? Is this offense really as simple as just add Joe Mixon? We'll talk about that in more next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Oh, man. 41-21 was the score as your Texans get a dominant victory over the New England Patriots. Move to 5-1 for only the second time in franchise history. Get their first victory up at in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium. All those things rang true, but the biggest thing was that Joe Mixon returned to the team, and apparently the instructions for having a run game be successful, just add Mixon.
Yeah.
Right? Is it really that simple? 713-572-4610. And I say all that to ask, basically, does that fix the run game? Like, is the run game simply fixed just because you have Joe Mixon available and running the toting the rock?
Yeah, the way I put it before the game when I was talking to you guys is, are we sure the offensive line is better? And I started thinking about it, like, well, they get better. They get better when you add Mixon.
Sure.
So yeah, I guess the answer is yes, they are better, but how much better are they? I mean, you know, CJ Stroud, you know, protection and moving around and power running game and all that. I think just add Mixon makes it better. Yeah, it makes the offense better, certainly makes the offensive line better. But that's a good problem to have, you know, to have that.
192 yards rushing in the course of this, 102 of those by Joe Mixon himself in the course of this. And obviously you have a couple of huge plays, a couple mm-hmm. of 50-plus yarders that really make up a majority of that. But, hell, I think you've talked about that. You can't really take away the big plays.
Yeah, that's a little bit irritating to me. Well, you take away those two big plays, they only average, whatever, 3-point-something yards a carry. Okay, but they had those two plays. I mean, you take those two 50-plus yarders away. Well,
outside of that, they would have had 20 yards on the ground.
But they had two 50-plus yarders.
Yeah, and I think
they did have those.
We were talking about this before the show, is I think that this stems from us as Americans being deathly afraid of math.
Yeah.
Whereas, average is about as far as we'll go here. And, mm-hmm. Average gets kind of really skewed by big numbers. Where something that would give us a little bit of ability to, portend future success mm-hmm. is probably something like what was more of like your median kind of rushing
exactly.
attack.
The
like,
median is something different.
Right. Something that's just like that would give you a better idea of, hey, what's kind of just generally what you roll out there in a vacuum. But here's the thing for me is that the advanced stats have gotten a little bit skewed because of the nature of this as well. But the rushing yards over expected, I think, is a big thing for me because, that gives you an idea of what's being blocked and what's the individual brilliance that's being brought to the stage by someone like Joe Mixon in the mm-hmm. course of this. Because, obviously, it's what's clear is against at least the two games that he played in a major way. Obviously, he had one more game, but he didn't play very much. Against the Patriots, not particularly good stopping the run. Colts, not particularly good stopping the run. But you put up just a crazy amount, a couple hundred yard plus games. Joe Mixon's giving you like a lot of yards above what was expected, right? The rushing yards over expected from him on average is like an extra yard and a half
mm-hmm.
over what is expected on a play.
Right.
At any given time. And that, I mean, coming into this game, like obviously now that's really a little bit smaller sample for him. He was the only one that had a positive rushing yards over expected
mm-hmm.
when it came to anybody who really ran the ball in a significant way as a running back. Damian Pierce now, after this game, is like 4 yards over expected, and you got to imagine that a lot of that is because of...
Well, because he didn't have a lot of carries.
Not a lot of carries, yeah. And then a lot of those that you were added after the big play. But mm-hmm. Damian Pierce, who did not have a lot of carries before... He was looking at, but before breaking that, he was looking at pretty negative rushing yards over expected. So it does feel like, yes, you dropped Joe Mixon in this, but I guess in some ways, roundabout, I'm asking, how much do we then attribute this to a not great defensive lines in what was happening here? How much do you attribute to the fixing that has happened by Bobby Slowick in trying to find some schemes, some blocking schemes that work a little bit better? Like, where do we feel about all of these?
Well, but okay, so I did the math real quick.
Okay.
Outside of those two, if you did do that, take away those two big runs, which, again, is kind of irritating to me. But if you did, they averaged 3.03 yards a carry. not what you would desire.
Yeah.
But then you have to consider like butterfly effect, and the game is going a certain way, and you did have those two big carries. So like if we're being honest, I want better than 3.03 per carry outside of those two big runs. But you still have to consider those two big runs and what they did. But yeah, if you want to parse it out to outside of those two big runs, yes, you got to have better than 3.03, and then maybe that's what you're talking about.
In some ways, but yeah, man. Now somebody posited this way, right? Maybe the question is better put as, how much better would Joe Mixon be if the O-line could actually block for other running backs?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a question worth asking. But what is nice is that if you have Joe Mixon, it seems very apparent that you should be able to run the ball at least to some degree, right? He had 102 in this game, and maybe you say if you're playing against a better run defense, it's not 102. But what is it at that point, 70-something? Because I'll take that.
I'll take 70-something.
Right? Like, what does it then look like? And it seems like, as much as I know for me in particular, I've had a lot of hand-wringing about this offensive line and blocking, I think that they have found some great play just because of how good you have your individual brilliance of your running back can be. And D'Amico Ryans, one of the early things that he was asked about was the running back duo that had a fantastic day in Mixon and Damian Pierce, is what he had to say.
Yeah, those guys bring playmaking ability, right? Even not just getting what the run is blocked for, but when your backs are special, they get more than what is blocked for. And that's what you saw today with the explosive runs, two big explosive runs, one by Damian and one by Joe. That's right. When you got backs who can do that extra, right, and that's where they're capable of doing, of giving us the extra. And for both guys, get touchdowns today, that was big.
Yeah, and what he just said there is something I wanted to bring up as well. It's not just, you know, is the offensive line better? Is the running game, was it just add Joe Mixon? What it is you have guys that can complement what you're doing on the front. You know, like make that explosive play happen. You can't downplay what Damian Pierce did, you know, and Joe Mixon.
He exploded outside zone, man.
We were talking about the explosion that Joe Mixon, you know, the Mark Vandermeer play-by-play, which, by the way, was a very good call, you know, shot out of a cannon, he said, you know, and that's as soon as he hit the line. That's before you went 59. So
yeah, that was a good 20 point something miles per hour, the fastest carry in the game.
So you take that into account. You know, that's what you do the blocking for, because you have backs that can, you know, explode through the hole like that. Not every play, but they're capable of doing that.
Yeah. Someone even gets the idea that you only need the running game to present a threat for play action. I think that. Fair, but you need to be able to tote the rock because of a game. I mean, hell, this game also illustrated it. You did not have an incredible passing day by Texan standards. 192 in the air is ultimately what you got. Mm-hmm. And you subsidized that very well with 192 on the ground, right? And ultimately that ends up being a robust offensive day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's the importance of it in and of itself. Like, I understand the play action, but I think the play action we've seen is going to be plenty useful even if you can't run the football. But ultimately, the idea that Joe Mixon can go and, like, break those big plays as D'Amico's pointing to, and honestly, it seems like all the Damian Pierce, lip service, it was proven to be at least somewhat or validated in some ways by seeing that once he reads that block well and gets to space, that he can still do those things that you want. I think that ultimately is the exciting part of this, is seeing that the run game can still produce at a high level. And honestly, it was nice seeing Damian do that, because it felt like, okay, it's not just Joe Mixon who can do that.
Oh, it's huge.
Damian brings some of that as well.
And I think the good thing about that is, even though Damian had a good game, I'm not really looking for him to do that every single game. That's more cherries on the top for me. But
yeah.
I think if he can just give you some positive yards to give Joe Mixon a rest, I think that's all I'm kind of looking for, to be honest.
And then the other part.
Do you think that the coaching views it that way? That, like, hey, that was a cherry on top? Or do you think that's validation for them to kind of do some level of splitting? Because you saw that Damian was taking whole drives in some. In fact, there was a good stretch of time in, like, the late third quarter into the fourth quarter that Joe Mixon did not carry the football and was not on the field.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, the 1-2 punch that I've talked about, if you just have the threat of that now, and the confidence boost that it is for Damian Pierce, don't sell that short either. Like he knew that he needed to get going, and now he popped one, you know, for 54. I think the confidence boost there, the confidence boost for the offensive line. Now look, you're getting into the meat of the schedule. To me, what was the at least before the season, The softest part of the schedule is over. Now you're getting into some, you know, some good tough games. You want to get the 5 to 7 yarders on first down. You know, you can't live with 3 yards a carry in Green Bay or hell, even, you know, down the road, you know, against the Jets for sure and the Lions for sure. You want 5 to 7 yarders. But I think the accumulation of what you were able to do yesterday gives you the confidence boost, the offensive line and the running backs, that you can do that.
Yeah, and especially, yeah, the confidence boost in that was definitely the big thing for me. Someone's mentioning 281, and that's Sonny Steve, saying rule of thumb is, you know, you grind out tough runs until you bust open the big ones. And I think the tough part for me is that you had seen this Texas team not just getting tough yards, it's just you were getting run stuff a lot. So, like, you were having runs that were not only being, you know, grinding out, you were having non-productive plays that were then sending you back and making it so that you were finding yourself in third and long. What felt good about this one is that you've had a good amount of successful run plays, and you saw the bust out potential both of those.
I call it chipping the rock. Just keep chipping at the rock, and it's all of a sudden there's going to be a big crack, and we saw it twice.
Absolutely. So I'm excited about what that says for the run game, but obviously against a better run defense, I think that'll give us a better image. Mm-hmm. However, I think it gave me a level of peace in this, seeing this team be able to run the football a little bit better. And I think Bobby Slowik found with some of the gap schemes that they integrated as well, like Joe Mixon. I'm pretty sure Joe Mixon's big run was more of a gap scheme run.
It was left middle.
Right. And so I think that seeing some of that mix, and maybe I don't want to say like completely getting away by any means from the outside zone, but maybe moving to some more inside situations where you have some trap type things and then some gap scheme things, allowed this offensive line, particularly the interior that we talk about, being kind of like with Shaq and Juice, and like having guys that maybe they benefit from getting downhill as opposed to some of the zone stuff laterally. I think that you might be now training your run game a little bit more towards the skills and talents of your players to make it more successful.
Maybe
and
even including the offensive linemen.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, there are still things we're going to wonder about. You know, Shaq didn't have his best game. I don't know if Shaq's had a season similar to last year when he was, quote unquote, the most underrated. But, you know, maybe these are some of the things that can boost that confidence as well.
Yeah, I appreciate the confidence from this text from 832. Mixon coming off of an injury, the high ankle sprain, and the Texans were winning. Next week, it'll be 3-1 split, as it should be. All right, look, personally, I hope so, because it feels like Joe Mixon, obviously, he is a dog. It's a different element when he's in the game. But ultimately, they ran the ball well, and that's the thing I am very grateful for in an 81-21 victory. All right, you're in the loop, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including a little bit of an Astros note that came out relatively recently. Plus, did you realize this was happening yesterday? Because I didn't. We'll talk about all that next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, let's get into What's Poppin' here in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. You got John Lopez. You got Figgy Figgy. You have myself, Reginald Latitula, hanging out with you on a Victory Monday. I just want to make sure that that's still there. But
it's still there.
Yep. Still 41-21 victory. They can never take that away from you. Never forget. All right. let's get into what's popping. One of these things that came down not more than an hour ago, Bob Nightingale, who covers MLB for USA Today, let us know that Gary Pettis, in fact, I'll read this verbatim because I kind of like the way he put it. Gary Pettis, one of the finest third base coaches and people in the game, has been let go by the Houston Astros after 10 years on the job. Pettis, 5-time Gold Glove center fielder when he was a player, has been an MLB coach for 27 years. And so the Astros aren't renewing his contract. How do you respond to, or how do you, like, what's your reaction to that, knowing that Pettis,
curious,
who's been here for a while, like, now just kind of does not have his contract renewed?
Just curious in every sense of the word, like, because maybe, first of all, he's been here the whole run. I mean, he got here in 2015.
Yes, sir.
Like, he's going to Detroit.
Oh,
you can see that. That's possible.
I bet you money.
Quite possible. Yeah.
He's going right to Detroit.
That's part of the curiosity, Figgy, because it's like, okay, he's been here the whole run. He's not young, but he's not done. You know, he's 66.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and live on the farm or whatever, you know. I'm curious, like, what was at work here? Was it just like, you know what, I'm kind of run its course, I'm ready to move on, or no, we don't want you? Maybe it's part of the new regime, you know. So I'm just kind of curious how it all played out.
Yeah. And I don't know if we'll get more information on that at some point in time. But yeah, that curious was just the general thought process on, why did that happen?
Exactly.
Gary Pettis will not return as a third base coach for your Houston Astros. Speaking of baseball, though, more fun to be had. Mm-hmm. And it happened quick, fast, and in a hurry for the Dodgers that they take game one of the NLCS 9-0.
Lopez squad
versus the Mets.
Yeah, that's it.
I knew that was coming. Yo boy is out there hooping, man.
Let's go. Now, one of the interesting things about this was that they said they're currently on a postseason record 33 consecutive scoreless innings.
Well, that'll get you some wins.
That's kind of propelled them here.
Yeah.
That goes back to obviously this nine run game that they win here. Then game five of the NLDS was a 2-0 victory against the Padres. Game four of the NLDS was an 8-0 victory against the Padres. And then after the Padres had a 6-run second inning in their game three, then they also did not score for the remainder of that. I thought Chandler Rome did an interesting thing going in looking at the Astros, like what their longest
their
streak
biggest
was.
Run, yeah.
And I believe that he ultimately came back with 24 consecutive scoreless innings in 2022, spanning three postseason games. But, man, Dodgers, like, it's offense, but also the pitching is really showing
and
up
unexpected
in a big way here
pitching.
As well.
Unexpected, really, over the course of the end of the season, you're sitting there looking at the Dodgers going, yeah, they've got a lot of parts. But their pitching was somewhat of a question. Well, it's not anymore. And they've won with bullpen games. They've won with starting pitching, getting it done. And for the record, Figgy, I put down when we were talking about this before the show, I'm so conflicted.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Look at him covering his track. We whooped him up pretty good last time he did this, didn't he? He done changed his tune.
I'm not the spelling genius, but that ain't how you spell excited. I think you spell excited wrong.
Oh, man. One of the things is that it's not like Shohei's going off in this either, is he?
Although he did okay.
He did okay.
He's getting it going a little bit, and that's the reason I was kind of like catching myself like, oh, come on, Shohei. Come on, Shohei.
And then you were like, okay, I don't have to be too excited because Shohei's not doing all stuff. Okay, very good. Yeah. I teased Ford saying, I did not know this was happening. Did you? The Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, which is not in the NBA Hall of Fame. The NBA doesn't have a Hall of Fame, but like the Basketball Hall of Fame kind of encompasses the NBA, college basketball, WNBA, all that stuff. They had their enshrinement ceremony yesterday.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb.
Enshrinement weekend was this weekend.
They have to know
they
better.
They got to do better.
They
than
have
this,
to.
Man.
They know better. Who doesn't know better than, well, let's schedule my birthday party on Christmas Day and invite everybody. Because that's what you're doing. Because it's like, hey, let's schedule the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame ceremony on an NFL Sunday. Like, you talk about something that's going to slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And it was a good class.
It was a very good class. When it came to the North American Committee, Chauncey Billups goes in, Vince Carter, Michael Cooper, Walter Davis, Bo Ryan, Charles Smith. Women's Committee, Simone Augustus, who was a monster.
Man.
Monster at LSU. Monster in the league with the Minnesota Lynx. And then also, notably, in addition to that, Doug Collins. One of the great coaches and provided one of my favorite basketball TV moments.
What happened to that boy?
Yeah. You don't know nothing about that, Sage. One of my favorite moments. I'm glad you knew exactly where I was going.
The funniest thing is Sage had no idea.
She had no idea what was happening there. She moved right on. Herb Simon and then Jerry West becoming the first three-time Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame.
Let's just put him in again.
Nominee. Yeah. So he goes in as a player. He goes in as a part of the 1960 U.S. basketball team. And then this time, obviously posthumously, as he passed in June, but he goes in as a contributor to the game with his, general manager and, advice and type things, consultant roles that he's had with L.A. and with Golden State. But yeah, a great class that somehow completely slipped my knowledge and my memory. I probably should have shouted this out on Friday as something to keep an eye on over the weekend. But
nobody could blame you.
It
snuck up on me. I was like, oh, wow, that's today?
Yeah. Another basketball thing that was yesterday that I do wonder what this looks like. WNBA game two. of their finals. The Liberty bounced back, get and win after they kind of fumbled game one. So the series is tied at one apiece. It's a 5-game series. But more importantly, let's go back to that game one as we got some ratings that came back from that. And apparently, Thursday Night Football did not hamper WNBA situation because the WNBA topped 1 million viewers, which ranked as the most watched game one in WNBA history.
I have a theory on this.
Okay.
A comparison, if you will, analogy, however you want to put it. I feel like this is your girl getting to watch a, getting you to watch a reality show.
And then you're in.
And then you're like, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I really do.
So in this instance, your girl is Caitlin Clark is what you're doing here?
Yeah, your girl is Caitlin Clark or the WNBA, because there is a Caitlin Clark effect on the NBA WNBA finals.
Oh, yeah, people have been.
Yeah, there is an effect.
People have been in in on the W just in general this year.
So it's kind of like,
that's part of it for
sure. You know, like I'm a big Below Deck fan, you know, mostly because of the boats.
Yeah,
but we got into it, and all of a sudden we're like into the storyline. Like,
oh, this is a show that you're speaking of.
Yeah, Below Deck.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, it's a reality show from a bunch of like multi-million-dollar yachts.
Okay.
I got into it because of the yachts, and now I'm into like Katie can't be doing that to that guy. You know, come on, Katie. You know, so it's
and
like,
then the storyline
pulls you in. Yeah, it's like and then so that's the WNBA.
Soon enough, you were like, oh no, she did. Yeah, I can't believe that.
Like
did you see what she said?
She's cheating on him.
What?
So they're doing all. I thought this was just showing the boats, how cool the boats
No, are. It's a story about the staff and all the drama, all the drama in the
how
background.
How did we end up discussing the reality
TV?
He just, you know what he did? He worked to this roundabout so he could talk about this with somebody else.
I'm a bigger fan of Below Deck Mediterranean than regular Below Deck.
Of course.
Deck, but,
it wouldn't be a reality show if it didn't have a spinoff in some other locale. Okay, good.
But that's what these ratings are telling me. Like, people got into the WNBA because of Caitlin Clark. They're like, you know, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
So that's
and
what's happening here.
It continues to grow. Yeah. I kind of want to get into some mess.
Okay.
You got your mess in with your Below Deck reality show. I want to get my mess in, which is the National Basketball Association.
Mm-hmm.
It serves as a mess factory in some ways. And preseason basketball, apparently, the mess starts this early as Dante DiVincenzo. He was one of the Villanova boys that was at with the New York Knicks. He ultimately gets traded away in the Karl Anthony Towns trade that takes him to New York. That's fine. You understand that is the groundwork. But when he was traded, apparently, you know, he reportedly wanted out of New York because the Knicks had also added Mikal Bridges. Remember that trade? And so supposedly he had a potential diminished role coming his way. But he had denied that feeling. However, I don't know. That might be the case as the Timberwolves played against the Knicks in preseason. And apparently when he was at the free throw line, there was some snark happening. Listen to see if you can hear what's happening here.
He's still with the Timberwolves, but he's geriatric. He's 38 years old now, folks. Going to his 18th season, so there.
All right, so he's at the free throw line, chirping at the Knicks bench. And if you can't hear, we can kind of hear his side of this. We can't hear the bench side of it, but he starts with, thanks for the trade. And then after he said that kind of snarkily, like, thanks for the trade.
Yeah.
And then after that, he goes, this is what happens when they let you run the show. The you in question, we are not certain of. However, at the end of this game, he had to be separated from Rick Brunson, Jalen Brunson's daddy, who is on the staff with the Knicks. As they got into chirping after the game on the floor. So maybe he was talking to Rick. Like, maybe he was talking to Rick, and it seems like maybe Rick Brunson runs stuff in New York to the point where he got Dante DiVincenzo traded.
And when you say separated, this wasn't like an all-for-show, you know, hold-me-back kind of thing. No. They were gonna go at it.
The vibes were anything but immaculate
They were gonna go at it.
Does this make that particular matchup or anything NBA related more interested for you?
Once the regular season starts.
There's a couple of preseason games for your Rockets this week.
I got both a lot on my plate right now. Now I'm watching the damn WNBA.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome, by the way. Someone said, don't forget, Prize Picks also has an effect. Of course, sports gambling.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get the people going. And so, I imagine that various gambling situations, even WNBA-wise, will keep people in there. So, shout out to all the sports gamblers. And I, you know what? I say this with love because I call myself this sometimes as well. You're sickos. All right. Yeah. Some other things. What's popping? We'll get into college football on a Tuesday as tomorrow. Today's a Monday, so that means tomorrow we'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of things that happen. Obviously, Texas wins the Red River Showdown. They handle up on Oklahoma pretty bad. Like, I was like, hey, man, anything can happen in this game. And apparently the anything was Texas beating the mess out of Oklahoma for the most part, which understandable. Like, Are you in a place where you're downing Brent Venables? Because it just feels like they have five wide receivers. Like, the defense is still good. The defense is really good.
Yeah, and that's what he does.
And offensively, they don't have much happening. Now, a lot of people are coming for them, looking at Dylan Gabriel over at Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And like, hey, so y'all didn't want to bring him back. So y'all brought Jackson Arnold out here. He didn't do anything. And now y'all are on Hawkins, the backup quarterback here.
Look, there are excuses built in. And we talked about it going into the game. We both thought Texas was going to run them. They did. We both thought one of their top five wide receivers healthy, I believe is what it was, or thereabouts, was going to affect them. It did. But this is a big problem offensively for – I'm not a big fan on the college level of having defensive-minded head coaches, because a lot of times the offense really, really suffers. There are exceptions when you can just give the offense to a guy and just not even think about it and they thrive. But I don't think that's happening at OU. I think Brent Venables has his hand in so many things, and offensively, that it's affecting them. They're not good at all.
It's a bad year for them. 4-2, 1-2 in SEC. But really, Longhorns had a good showing of it. Mm-hmm. Gunnar Helm. What's my guy's name? I want to make sure. Gunnar Helm. There we go. The tight end. He's kind of nice for Texas. That's really fun. And one more thing, college football wise, we'll again circle back to it tomorrow. Army and Navy, for the first time since, get this, 1960.
Before I was born.
Man.
Really? Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, cool. First time since 1960, both in the AP top 25. So, hey.
That's wild.
How about that?
That is crazy.
We were kind of hinting around this a couple of weeks ago, like, that Army-Navy game all of a sudden going to be.
Not only that, like, that Army-Navy game might be a part two, right? They are veering towards possibly meeting up in their conference championship and then coming back around and seeing each other.
Have that ever happened?
No. Well, not for them.
No.
Yeah, not for them, but Texas has done it a couple times.
No, I'll talk about for them.
Yeah, no.
Man,
no.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's going to be sweet.
And guess who's going to the Army-Navy?
We are.
Yeah. The football product is actually going to be real interesting.
We might have to stay for the whole doggone game.
Or not.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, or not.
You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Thanks for hanging out with us. Coming up next, let's get into it. Who hooped in a 41-21 victory for your Texans over the Patriots? Send in who you think had a fantastic day. 713-572-4610. We'll discuss that next.